You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
In case you missed it, there's a new genre of film. It's called the superhero film, and it's kind of going gangbusters. The latest installment is the Avengers sequel, Age of Ultron. Josh Nelson is here to dissect the latest pop confection tentpole roller coaster ride of a film. Josh's musings can be found at filmology.com, and apparently he's on another radio station from time to time. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon.
We've got a little bit of dialogue from the Avengers, some snappy Robert Downey Jr., etc. But if you can, the basic setup, what happens in this film?
Well, if you think back to the first Avengers film, it was the first of the culminating points of the first wave, that extensive wave of Marvel films that attempted to assemble all the Avengers to fight Loki from the Thor series, who wanted to dominate the Earth.
The bad brother, the bad guy.
The adopted brother, as Thor refers to him. So this one is very similar, and I think that's maybe where the film falls down a little. Instead of Loki trying to dominate the world, it's a cybernetic creation named Ultron, voiced by James Spader, who wants to destroy the world in order to save it. Yeah. And this is, I guess, one of the many reference points for the film is that sort of Frankensteinian myth, because Ultron is the creation of Tony Stark, Iron Man, and Bruce Banner, the Hulk, in an attempt to make the Avengers irrelevant and redundant, because then the Earth will be safe.
They basically want to protect the world by creating a form of artificial intelligence.
And surprise, surprise, it backfires.
Surprise, surprise. So we're just going to play a little bit of the film, give you a taste of what it's like. This is the other Avengers having a go at Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man for coming up with this crazy concept.
The Avengers were supposed to be different than S.H.I.E.L.D.
Anybody remember when I carried a nuke through a wormhole?
No, it's never come up.
Save
no,
New York?
Never heard that.
Recall that? A hostile alien army came charging through a hole in space. We're standing 300 feet below it.
We're the Avengers. We can bust arms dealers all the live long day, but that up there, that's the end game. How are you guys planning on beating that? Together.
Together, because Captain America, solidarity will win every day. Okay, Josh, what's it like?
If you'd asked me on Sunday evening when I saw it, I would have had a look of disappointment on my face, because my first reaction was, you know, there's some great moments, there's some of the best moments, I think, from the Marvel canon so far, and some really turgid twee dialogue, some bits that don't really feel like they belong in there. It's quite inconsistent overall. That was my gut feeling. I watched it again this afternoon. I decided to give it a second chance.
You watched it twice. I've been thinking about seeing it again. Yeah, okay. And
far more forgiving on a second viewing. Why? I can see the beats. I can kind of see the mechanics of what Joss Whedon was trying to achieve. And in many ways, this is an impossible task for a director, because not only have you got all of the Avengers from the first round, but you've got a new villain.
New
you've
characters.
Got two enhanced, a la mutants. So we've got the Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch there as well. And they're trying.
Are they not allowed to say mutants, by the way? Because the other film company owns.
I'm pretty sure it's Fox
X-Men.
Owns the term mutant, so they call them enhanced.
Yes.
And I don't think they refer to them by their X-Men names. They refer to them by their human names. And it's such a difficult film, and I think in many ways it tries to play it safe, because he's trying to keep so many balls in the air at one time. And the other thing about this film where I think it feels a little bit jarring is, and it was there in the first one as well, which I rewatched during the week, is you have Whedon's trademark TV style, which is, you know, small screen, yes, character-driven drama, and it's there in the first one, the extended sequences on aboard the S.H.I.E.L.D. airliner. And you get it here, and it seems to jar with the high concept, big blockbuster set pieces, and then the sudden removes to, in this case, a homestead sequence and the very small scale character drama.
Here's my question then. They've got spectacular special effects, tick. Amazing sort of fight scenes where comic book panels seem to come to life, tick. Lots of really quite slick, well-delivered, humorous one-liners in the midst of battles where, of course, the entire future of the Earth is at stake. Tick. They seem to have everything that was in the first film, more of it, quite spectacular special effects scenes, yet it's kind of not nearly as uplifting and fresh feeling as the first one. Maybe it's just because they're kind of trashy popcorn films, and once you can't keep upping the ante. There's only so much adrenaline you can pack into a film.
I think you've nailed it. They've tried to recreate the original by upping the ante and, you know, just amplifying everything,
yes,
rather than trying something a little different. And it doesn't have the benefit of the buzz, the excitement that you really get in that first act of the original Avengers when you see these heroes coming together. And, yeah, will it work? How will they gel? you know, is this going to be too big for Whedon to handle? And there was all the buzz around, you know, Whedon's first big blockbuster effort as well. This film struggles with that, and the opening scene is really dull, and it's bad special effects
too. You
didn't
like the opening scene?
I thought the opening scene is some of the worst CGI of the Marvel scene. Okay. There's some great stuff in there as well, but this is a mixed bag, but I'm going to be more forgiving having seen it twice.
Oh, that's so funny, because I wanted to see it again to see if I could change my mind. Going to bring in someone who studies these things for a living, get his verdict in a moment. Alan's caught from Box Hill on good robots in film. Alan, what's yours?
Well, I'm 67, so mine is Forbidden Planet and everybody's favourite, Robbie the Robot.
Oh, indeed. The basis of, I think there's a little bit of R2-D2 and C-3PO drawn from him. Do you remember watching it the first time?
Oh, yes.
Do you remember where?
No, quite honestly, I don't remember.
No.
But it was a very dark atmosphere for the whole film, sort of, especially when you're younger.
Yeah, oh, look, it's an incredibly dark film, Alan. Liam Burke joins us. He's the author of the comic book film adaptation. He talks about and studies these things at Swinburne University. Liam, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Look, I wanted to get into everyone's favourite and scariest robot soon. I also want to make a note, possibly one of the most spectacular fight scenes towards the end, worthy of note, kind of just marks for technical merit, not dramatic merit. Are they kind of, have they burst their own bubble, do you think, Marvel? They sort of keep on upping the ante and they kind of can't keep delivering?
Well, I mean, one of the concerns that Josh pointed to here with this film is they are continuing storylines now. They're not self-contained movies unto themselves. They set up stories in individual movies and try and pay them off in these big team-up movies. But then they set up future storylines for later movies.
This is why the director, Josh Whedon, went crazy, isn't it? Because he's got every single person who's... doing a Marvel film in the next 5 years, saying you have to stick the seeds of my storyline in your film.
Yeah, a little Easter egg here, a little suggestion there, introduce hint at new characters. I'm not surprised he's not going to be back for the third Avengers, because he's probably deserves a break at this point. So they do lack kind of a cohesive identity unto themselves. They're not standalone movies, and it's a lot about setup. But in that sense, in a kind of episodic television style narrative, it is a satisfying second act, but it's a second act.
But did it feel satisfying to you? So put aside your academic concerns, did you actually enjoy it? Did you come out happy?
I enjoyed it, but then it lacked the novelty or innovation of the first film. The first film, as Joshua already pointed to, was getting the band together. Would it work? We already knew it would work. In fact, the first act is them being the Avengers. So when the third act of them is them being the Avengers some more, it doesn't really have that novelty. I think they've recognised that, and without giving anything away, there seems to be some adjustments going forward.
Yeah. It's film by committee, isn't it? Isn't that one of the reasons it doesn't work?
Well, I mean, film has always been by committee. You think about back to the Golden Age.
You can see the committee in this one is the difference, I guess.
Well, it reminds me of the Golden Age of Hollywood, these production, the Dream Factory, with the emphasis on factory. They would produce 40 films a year at Universal or MGM. And now with Marvel, it's like that studio. It's a generic blueprint. They repeat it time and again, and occasionally one rises above the rank and file, and it becomes a great movie, A Dark Knight, an Iron Man 1. And, you know, the rest are just enjoyable popcorn fodder.
Look, I want to get into people's favourite robots. Let me read some of your texts. The robot in Metropolis, 90 years old, but still impressive and defining. The Avengers franchise is fine, a bit of mental chewing gum, but the best robot film, the best robot film is Bicentennial Man, great adaptation, and the worst is iRobot, both great Asimov stories. That's from Jason in Seaford. He says he's getting his geek on. One other thought that I had, Josh. I read an interview with Chris Hemsworth, Thor, the man who grew up on Phillip Island, and he actually said in his interview, I was watching Guardians of the Galaxy and I thought, wow, I really need to be more laid back and more wisecracking. And I've got to say, I think Guardians of the Galaxy, they keep on changing the mode. When Avengers comes out, you kind of go, oh, right, you can be a serious superhero and be wisecracking and not be Iron Man. Then they've gone all space opera, bizarre, futuristic, quite literally fantastical. So it makes Avengers seem like a poor follow, doesn't it? Isn't one of the problems Guardians of the Galaxy?
Well, I think the benefit that James Gunn had with Guardians of the Galaxy, he could be more out there because there wasn't all the vested interest of everyone trying to have their piece of flesh.
So it's one man able to just have fun.
And there's not the same, I guess, financial outlay or resting on the outcome of Guardians of the Galaxy, because it's not the name franchise. It's not a Superman. It's not Iron Man. It's not Hulk necessarily. So I think, my worry with Guardians of the Galaxy, and I've said this before, is the second one. The second one could just be a retread, play it safe.
or even be drawn back into the Marvelverse, and then it's going to suffer from the same problems. Whedon, I think the script in Avengers Age of Ultron actually is Whedon's sort of way at having a sly dig at what's going on. There's a moment in the climax where Hawkeye turns to another character and says, "The city is flying, we're fighting an army of robots, I have a bow and arrow, and none of this makes any sense." To me, that's the bit where I think Whedon's just put up the white flag and says, "You know what? What else can I do here?"
The bubble's too big, isn't it? Let me ask you this, Liam. I really felt like, right, I might not need to watch another Marvel film. I might have maxed out. And I am someone who's steeped. I've got thousands of comic books at home from my teenage years.
I think where Marvel have been shrewd is there's no Iron Man 4. There's not a planned Thor 4. There's going to be one more follow-up. Yeah. But they're trying to extend the boundaries of the genre. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy owes more to Star Wars than it does to Superman. And the next line of films include Doctor Strange, which is moving into the magical supernatural territory. Films like Black Panther, which finally get to see a little bit of multiculturalism in the Marvel Universe, and that white guy's named Chris. And Captain Marvel, which will be a female superhero. So they are looking to bring as much variety as they can, while still giving us the conventions that we expect. They've been successful at that up until now. I wouldn't discount them just yet, but we'll be interested to see where it goes in the future.
Three white men in their 30s and 40s. We must be talking about a comic book film. Josh Nelson is with me, Liam Burke as well from Swinburne University, talking about your best, most scariest and favourite robots. Michael's called from Yarraville. Michael, what's yours?
For me, Gort in The Day the Earth Stood Still. Between the robot and the Thurman music behind it, spooky as all hell.
Well, spooky as all hell. I haven't seen him, Michael. Forgive me. Some of your texts. Johnny Five is alive. K-9 from Doctor Who. Nice. And someone saying The Empire Strikes Back, Mad Max 2, Terminator. You name the sophomore flicks, always seem to be better. And maybe the Avengers will be judged differently in time. Maybe. Liam, favourite robot, android?
Well, just this week at Swinburne, we were doing animation and we looked at Pinocchio. Not quite a robot, but I've got no strings. It's still got that master-servant dichotomy that we associate with the Frankenstein myth. And most interestingly, this release of Avengers, because it's now a Walt Disney production, a nice bit of corporate synergy is they have Ultron saying that I've got no strings song. So a nice bit of corporate synergy that works for them. They wouldn't have got the rights to it otherwise. But, the students are still amazed. Pinocchio, 1940, still holds up. It's that great sort of, not quite as malevolent as the Terminator, but still, it has that same man-creating machine.
Yeah, yeah. Nice choice. You must study this stuff for a living. Josh, what's yours? Have you got a favourite?
It's hard to go past the Terminator in terms of design and threat. Impact. But in terms of one that Ultron made me think of, not just Pinocchio, that's a really good one, and this is really hokey, The Lawnmower Man. Do you remember that film with Jeff Fahey?
Yeah.
Because there's a moment when Ultron is searching through his databanks and they try and represent it visually on screen, and it's so hokey. It's like, we're back in 1991. The Lawnmower Man.
I can't believe The Lawnmower Man. You passed from the past. Look, another favourite robot. I watched this film recently. Roy Batty, a.k.a. Rutger Hauer. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, this is toward the end of the film.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Time to die.
A truncated version of that speech.
we had to keep it short. That's okay. For the same reason that... they were shutting down the film set while they were filming that scene, which is why you can see Dawn. Some more of your texts. Lot of love for Robbie the Robot. $6 Million Man from Jazz. You get points simply for thinking of it, I think. The Computer in 2001. Yes, the HAL 2000. Can't remember what the number is. Is Event Horizon a robot kind of thing? Close and bloody scary. Someone else mentioning Aliens.
Is there Lance Henriksen?
And John Hurt's character,
Okay. And Paul Reiser? No, he's the corporate man, isn't he? That's right. Liam, before I let you go, comic book film adaptation, half spruik but half explanation. What's in there?
So, I've been interested in comic book movies. Why are they so popular now after 100 years of indifference? And what effect have they had on the industry? And I looked around and there wasn't a book on this topic. So I talked to a lot of people in the industry, people who've made these movies, comic book creators, did a lot of audience research, and it's all in the book, which is just out this month.
So other than CGI, what's the reason?
Other than CGI, you got to remember that Now these companies are massive transmedia empires. And, you know, you can get maybe, you can't really get a video game out of Oliver Twist. You're not going to get a theme park ride out of Pride and Prejudice. But Spider-Man, Batman, you can slap those on a lunchbox. You can wear a T-shirt.
The ultimate merchandising vehicle.
Exactly.
Gosh, that's a harsh, cynical view of the industry, my lord. But you're a fan as well, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm enthusiastic, and it comes across, hopefully, in the book.
Okay. Liam Burke's the comic book film adaptation. He works at Swinburne as well. Liam, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
Josh Nelson, who's seen three Avengers films in a week. He saw one of them twice, the sequel. He does it so you don't have to. Josh, thank you.
Thank you.
Filmology.com is the website and the Twitter account. It's Filmology as well.